Okay, a couple hours of open lines for you now. As I mentioned, Monday night, we begin the Skype line in addition to the wild card line, East, West, and first-time caller lines now. You'll be able to call us through your Skype system and that code to get to us, George97313. Those of you who Skype, George97313. It's set up where it goes through Tommy's computer, and he hooks you in. And then I take your Skype call, and there you go. We've only got one Skype line, so first come, first serve. That'll start Monday night on Coast to Coast AM. Hotline night tonight for you, by the way. We're going to open up the special hotline called The Greatest Story Ever Told. Your greatest story ever told, or one that you heard. That phone number is 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. Now, the greatest story you've ever heard can be a great story. It could be fun. It could be sad. Who knows? It's just a great story. And mine, of course, started on Thanksgiving. Some of you know this story. It's a great story with so far a very sad, tragic ending. But I had a friend and his wife wanted to join me for Thanksgiving when I was in St. Louis. They flew from Los Angeles. And that Friday night after Thanksgiving, we all went out. And after dinner, he was not drinking. He was a Coca-Cola guy. He was going up two steps into a nightclub, and he tripped. And I was ahead of him, and his wife was screaming, and I thought something happened. I thought there was a fight back there. Who knows? I turned around, and there he was, lying in a pool of blood. He had fallen face down. And I said, Mike, we've got to get you up. You're bleeding from the nose all over the place. And he said, I can't move. And I said, what do you mean you can't move? He said, I can't move. Just then I realized there's a problem. So we called 911. The EMTs came, and we all pushed him over and lifted him up, put him on a stretcher, and took him to the hospital. They stayed in St. Louis for 2 months. He was paralyzed. Paralyzed from the neck down. They operated on him within a few days, and there he was in St. Louis. We've tried to figure out how we're going to get him back to Los Angeles. His job was here. His home is here. His family is here. How are we going to get him back? And because you can't put him on a commercial plane. He can't move. I went back to the nightclub, and I said, listen, I don't know who's culpable here. But, we'll get a waiver signed and just get him back. So they gave us a check for $22,000 to medevac him back to Los Angeles. Two pilots, nurses, ENT. I mean, he was on a breathing thing. It was just a mess. But they did that. And we had flown his daughter into St. Louis, and she signed a power of attorney. We got it signed, and it was done, and witnesses and the whole thing. And so she signed documents on his behalf. And we got it done. We got him back to Los Angeles. So that's when I thought this story, great story, horrible ending, was about ready to end, at least for the time being. Nope. The day he gets back, he's in a hospital room. And some process server breaks through the line, gets up through security. He can't move. He's in bed. Paralyzed from the neck down. A process server serves divorce papers on his stomach. It was unbelievable. So that's done. They're now divorced. They had been married only a year. And what a nightmare. So to this day, keep in mind this happened on Thanksgiving. So we're talking about 3 months, three months now. He's still paralyzed. He's moving his fingers a little bit. Those of you who have asked me via email, and he's moving his leg a little bit, but he's not getting up. And it's still going to take, I think, a very, very, very long time. So to me, that's probably one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. Doesn't necessarily mean the best story by any means, but it is a truly a great, unbelievable story. So that's the hotline tonight, 818-817-0021. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and we'll go to your calls. Let's go to Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Ilana. Hey there.
It's Ilana. How you doing?
It's what?
Ilana.
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 I want to apologize for having a little bit of a cold in my throat.
You don't have to apologize.
And I have a little shout out to the online Babylon 5 community. Hi, everybody, and especially those who were alive and active back in 1995, 96, 97, et cetera, when Babylon 5 was on.
It was huge, wasn't it?
What again, please?
It was huge. People loved it.
Absolutely loved it. But one of the wonderful things is that Jasinski was probably the first ever, this was even when the web was being born, and we were on the old Babylon 5 news group, which is now called Google Groups, and he joined us. He was writing 100 episodes at the same time, answering everybody's questions, being very interactive. I don't think the guy got sleep any time during the time, but he really made the fan community a real community at the time. I want to praise him for that. And if you've been around at the time, it was really fun. He joked with us. He cared about us. And I think he may have been the first producer to ever interact with the audience like that. Nowadays, you can take it for granted with almost every show. But he was a pioneer at the time. And I got to be a liaison to the guy who was doing the soundtrack to everybody, so people remember me for that. And so, but I want to praise Jasinski for caring about us as fans at the time so much. Thank you, sir. We remember you. We salute you. And keep on rocking. I know he's supposed to be doing pretty well nowadays.
Well, there you are. See, but that's a guy who understands that his success is the audience that watches. And he gave back. Good for him. Let's go to El Cerrito, California. First-time caller. Hi, Star. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good.
What's up?
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous. First time calling the show.
It's just like a telephone call, that's all.
Yeah. Well, I'm calling because I wanted to tell you a story about a Ouija board experience that I had.
Okay, and just forget that millions are listening to you. That's all you have to do. Just forget that.
All right. So when I was about 14 and in middle school, a couple of friends of mine thought it would be cool to play the Ouija board. So one of my friends brought a spell book, and it showed you how to create a Ouija board. And we used pen, we used the paper, and we used a coin as the little cursor that you move around. And we decided to go to the gym, bring the material to make the Ouija board. We made it, and we all got in a circle and played with it a little bit. We had to say this little seance thing where we called upon the witches of something or other, and we basically spun it around in the cursor in a circle, and we all swore that we were not moving the cursor, and it moved on its own. And we asked all these silly questions like, who are you, and what do you want to know from us, and what can we know about you? And on a couple of occasions, we asked who it was, and it spelled out devil.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
That, right about then, it would be time to leave, but you didn't,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. It was really creepy, definitely really creepy. And I don't think any of us really took it that seriously. I think we all kind of just thought we were like someone was fooling around with somebody. But we continued to play after it said devil. And this was in the month of October. It was around the Halloween season, holiday, sorry. And we kind of just kept on playing the game. And it attracted a lot of attention at the school, and a lot of people were kind of gathering in and playing with us and thinking, oh, well, this is cool. This is kind of crazy. I've never played this before, but it's actually real. So I decided to play the game a couple of times on my own just for fun, just to, you know, pass time. And
that's pretty bold of you to do that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people thought it was pretty bold, but I was kind of like unconvinced that it was really, actually really happening, because I'd heard things like, oh, the cursor moves because your mind makes it move, and it's really all just about mind and body and how you're mentally making the cursor move. So I wasn't completely convinced that this was actually happening, or that I was actually speaking to someone from a completely different world. And so I played it a couple of times, and I was kind of just thinking, this is fun. This is nothing.
Was it moving for you?
Oh, yeah, it was moving. I would go on it, and I would just move the coin around in the circle, and I would call upon anybody. Like, I remember a couple of occasions I called upon Martin Luther King, and I asked, well, what do you think about today's future? What do you think about how we're going in the day? What are your opinions? And I would ask it, like, are you really Martin Luther King? Is this really Martin Luther King? and it would say no almost immediately.
It would say no?
It would say no.
So whoever was doing this, it was trying to trick you.
Yeah, it was definitely trying to trick me. So I'd ask the questions like, well, if you're not Martin Luther King, who are you? And it would say, oh, I can't tell you because you're going to be afraid. And I would say, no, I'm not going to be afraid. Just tell me who you are. And then it would spell out like demon or devil. And so I just stopped playing it for a while. And then like somehow I worked up the nerve to play the game again. And this is like a week before Halloween. And I happened to come across a friend who was at a little Halloween bash at a park. So I asked her, hey, do you want to play the game with me? It's kind of cool. And she agreed to do it. So we sat down in the park and we played the game. We asked the silly questions again, like what color is my shirt? And they would answer right. And then we swear to each other that we weren't moving it. And it was just like that. It was done. We stopped playing it. We threw away the paper, threw away the material to make the Ouija board, and it was over. And then, like, the craziest thing happened. I came to school next week, and this was, like, the day of Halloween. Everyone was dressed in costumes. Everyone was playing pranks on each other, laughing and having fun. And she came to school, this friend who I played the Ouija board with, and she was completely different.
It got
like
her.
So, yeah, it was really scary. She acted really strange, and she was just not herself. We were asking her, what's wrong? Is there something going on? And she was just... She didn't want to speak to us. And
How long did she act that way?
Oh, all throughout the day. All throughout the day. It gets crazier. She came to school with a gash on her hand, a big, deep gash in her hand. And it was covered with a bandage or something. And we asked her what happened. And she didn't want to tell me, but a couple other friends came up to her and asked her what happened, who were playing the Ouija board with us before the whole thing was between me and her. And she apparently told them that there were dark figures following her.
Yeah, well, this is what happens with a Ouija board. You open up a portal. It's not a game. Don't play with it. I tried. Don't do it. Trust me on that one, Star. Trust me. Let's take a few more calls before the break. Mike in Livermore, California on the wildcard line. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Good morning, George. And I agree with you. And I've heeded your warning. I won't play with a Ouija board. You've been doing these the spots on the Bow Theater in San Leandro. And I don't know, the listeners ought to be aware of this. This is a great thing. This guy has reopened this old retro theater.
No, he's Dan Dillman.
Yes,
super,
yes, exactly.
Super guy. He told me what he was doing, and I said, Dan, let me tell you what. You know, I don't charge for this. I like what you're doing. Just, you know, send me the copy, and, you know, we'll look at it, we'll approve it, and I'll do them for you, you know, free, gratis. You just, you know, you got to buy the time on the radio station and stuff like that. But I think the world of what he's doing.
Oh, I want to put this out to the people in the Bay Area because he hasn't been getting big crowds. It is such an experience. I'm actually a mini celebrity there because they've heard me on your show.
I love it.
The people that show up, they're just interested in knowledge and the networking and the communication. You get to talk to the author or the director or the producer of the documentary afterwards, and these sessions go on for an hour and a half.
Yeah, he's got a great idea going out there, doesn't he?
Oh, I love it. In fact, I had emailed you and Tommy about trying to get one of the guys that the first documentary I went to, this Servando Gonzalez, this immigrant from Cuba. And it's all on the Council on Foreign Relations. It was just excellent. And talking to this guy, he was fantastic. But I did have a little story about
okay.
The greatest story.
All right.
In my misspent youth, I must have been about 18 years old, I heard about a party one night, and I was going to it. I'm on my little Honda 175, and I'm going down the street to the ton, and I'm coming up. I got a six-pack of beer underneath my shirt, illegal, of course. And I'm coming up to where the railroad tracks are. And where the railroad tracks are on that street, it's about an 8 to 10 foot incline. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, I'm going to jump these, you know. So I gun it up to 45, 50 miles an hour, and I hit these tracks. I get about airborne about 15 feet or so. As soon as I'm airborne, I see on the other side that all the cars in my lane are stopped. So I lock the brakes up in the air. Oh. I hit the ground. I bounce a couple of times. I kind of veered off into the oncoming traffic lane, which there was oncoming traffic. And some miraculous way, I avoided them all. And at the last second, I cut back in, came to a complete halt. And I'm feeling this sigh of relief, like, oh, I just dodged this. And I look up, and on the trunk of the car in front of me, it says, Alameda County Sheriff. I look over, and all the people, there's a bunch of people out on the lawn, and they're all cheering, yeah, Evel Knievel, do it again, do it again. And I look over, and there's a couple of county sheriffs standing there on the curb, and their jaws are hitting their knees. And thank God for Honda and the electric start.
Absolutely.
Started that bike up, zipped on out of there, but no bad deed goes unpunished. About two blocks later, I laid it down, wrenched my ankle, and was on crutches for about 3 weeks.
As my dad would say, and my daughter would say, juju gets even.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. A big believer in karma. It comes back at you.
You got it.
George, it was great talking to you, and keep plugging the Ball Theater. They're a great thing.
Absolutely. Tell Dan hi for me.
Oh, I will. I'm going to see him tomorrow night. They're doing a show on crop circles.
Great.
I'm taking my wife and my girlfriend.
I hope it's one and the same.
Oh, no. Well, there's a real good friend of mine. She's in the coast to coast. She listens to you all the time. So me and her go see these things. My wife's really not into it, but she wanted to see the crop circle thing. So we're making it a threesome tomorrow.
And the wife is comfortable with this, huh?
Oh, yes. This is a friend of mine that actually goes back 25 years or so.
Well, that's cool. That's cool that she's got that kind of confidence about herself and faith about you.
Oh, well, you don't stay married for 25 years without a little faith.
My folks are going on 61 years in August.
Wow.
Can you believe it? 61
years. I can only hope. I can only hope.
Yep. Okay, take care.
You too.
Absolutely. Like I said, my dad's going to be 87 years old on Monday. I got to get back up there and see him when I make my trip back up to St. Louis. It's one of the things of spending time in other cities. You sometimes don't get a chance to see your parents as often as you should. You got to start making some time for that. You really do. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And we've got the greatest story you've ever heard. It could be fun. It could be happy. It could be sad. 818-817-0021. We'll be right back. And, of course, the greatest story you've ever heard line is 818-817-0021. Boy, let me tell you, I've got the greatest staff that any talk show host could ever have. Let me tell you what they're planning next week here on Coast to Coast. On Monday, it's called The Oil Card, Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century. Just a dynamite program with James Norman. Ken Klein joins us as we talk about Angel Wars on our Tuesday night program. On Wednesday, Tom Carey and Don Schmidt join us, an incredible story discussing recent testimony from a crew member of the flight that flew the bodies, the alien bodies, out of Roswell. Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter, has a handful of stories, including strange-looking mummies buried in China, and also what's going on at Yellowstone. That'll be Thursday on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go by going to Newport, Rhode Island. Let's go to Sherry on the Great Story line. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, it's Shari.
Shari, Sherry, it is what it is.
Okay, and I'm from Seattle. But other than that...
You know what? I punched up the wrong line.
Oh.
I did that.
Do you want to hear my story?
No, I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
Go back to the other line. Okay. Hold on. Let's go to east of the Rockies. It's Brooke in Newport, Rhode Island. There you are, Brooke.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
And happy 210.
Let's hope so.
Tommy was very amused by my eliminating the zero. But I think it makes it a lot easier in the new decade to call it 210, 211, 212.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the real reason I'm calling. The real reason I'm calling is in regards to your story on with Ricky Nelson's sons a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, what about that?
Well, for 10 years, up until 2 weeks before 9/11, I lived at 1865 North Fuller Avenue.
You were neighbors?
Yes, I lived immediately around the corner from the Nelson House. As a matter of fact, my apartment overlooked the Grumman Estate, built by Sid Grumman, who built the Chinese Theater. And I was a personal assistant to Robert J. Margalef, who was a double Grammy Award-winning producer and Stevie Wonder's producer. And I was his personal assistant for 10 years. And I lived at 1865 North Fuller.
You remember seeing the Nelsons running around?
No, they didn't live there at the time. Ah. And actually, you wouldn't recognize the house because it's painted in very different colors. And there's a big wall that's in front of it that never was in front of it when it was used for filming for the TV series.
Interesting.
But the more interesting things about this area are the fact that Runyon Canyon Park at 2000 North Fuller was a 148-acre estate, and it was built by the singer John McCormick and later was owned by Huntington Hartford, who was the A&P heir. And then it was leased by Errol Flynn. And then in the 1960s, the abandoned estate was the home to the Charles Manson family. And neighbors there on some summer nights would say that the old mansion would appear. Then in 1983, there were psychic investigators on the site that were confronted by a malevolent voice that told them to get out. And the Nelson House is also haunted.
No, there's no way.
Yes, by Ozzie Nelson. He has been seen in the old house by family members.
Just hanging around, I guess, huh?
Yes. Now, I was trying to get in that night, but in a way, I'm kind of happy that I didn't because I didn't know if all this would upset the Nelson sons because the whole area seemed extremely haunted. And there were times in my building, there was a couple that were found murdered in their apartment. One of my neighbors committed suicide. And there were other neighbors that were involved in voodoo. And then on certain full moon nights, the police would come with the huge helicopters with all the lights, and they would literally take out 300 or 400 people that were engaged in satanic services in the park.
What an area this was.
Yes, yes, this was an unbelievable area. And then one of my immediate neighbors was Candace Moss, and Candace Moss was the scriptwriter for MASH, and she was a dear friend of mine up until she passed away in 2001.
Brooke, you're the only one left.
Yes, George, I know, but the building that we lived in, there were so many strange things that were going on in there. And I mean, the water in some people's apartments was coming up very slimy and gooey. And there was just a weird, like, presence in that whole area and in that building. And I just found it very creepy and very spooky living there. And there were times when the circuits would go out for no reason at all.
Well, aren't you glad you got out of there?
I miss it. I miss it in a way. And I miss Hollywood because, you know, you're in my area. You're in my neighborhood now. And so I miss it quite a lot.
Well, and you moved a long, long way away, but I don't know if Ozzy would be haunting that house or not. Now we go to Seattle, Washington, and Shari is there.
Hey, George.
Hello, let's do this again.
I was listening to your story about your friend and thought that I'd call in. In 1993, my family was involved in some pretty interesting accidents. The first one started where my brother's son, who was 13 years old, was out in the woods logging, and my brother sent him to have lunch, and in the interim, he went and fell a tree that struck another tree that chopped the top off of another tree and flew 50 feet and hit him in the back of the head and killed him instantly.
Oh, my gosh.
And 7 weeks after that, my son was driving a car. The prelude to this is that my husband and I had gone to Holland for his mother's 75th birthday, and before I left, I had this very uneasy feeling that there was going to be a car accident. And a couple days before that happened, there was a car accident. It was one of his friends, and there was this temporary sigh of relief. But just before I left, I took all of the car keys and put them away and told my mom not to let Sean drive. And just before I left, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And so while I was on the trip, my son had gotten a car that had not been in the equation. It was a 1967 Mustang. And while driving home from the grocery store after church, he lost control of the car. And he had his cousin in the car, which was the brother to the one that passed away 7 weeks earlier. And their car went off a cliff.
Was there a curse here on the family?
I have no idea, but within 7 weeks, I lost two nephews. My son was put in a wheelchair, and my mom was diagnosed with cancer.
Unbelievable. How did you handle all that?
Well, initially, going back and forth to three different hospitals, I was too busy to think about anything else other than taking care of.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to buckle down and do what you do.
And you know, we were in Holland when it happened, and so we had to make special arrangements to get out of there. And people were just really terrific. I mean, they cleared rows out for us so we could sleep. So when we got off the hospital, out of the airport, we were rested. And so there was a lot of positive things. And the place where I work, people pitched in and donated stuff. And, you know, but my son lived, and he's in a wheelchair, but he's got a better attitude about it than I would. My brother, who has lost three children, and I don't know how he survives it, to be honest with you.
No, that's not easy.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing a parent has always feared is outliving their own children.
Yes. And you don't look, my son was 6'6" and an athlete, and you just, you know, to see him in a wheelchair at times still takes my breath away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Would he consider stem cells?
Yeah, I think he's open, but I think there's also a part of him that has resigned himself to his life. I mean, he was in a medical facility that we were really privileged to live close to, and they prepared him absolutely to deal with his injuries and go on living. And they kind of teach them not to have false hope. But I, you know, we've always talked about my friend who's no longer on the planet either, who was a great astrologer, looked at his chart and said there was nothing in his chart that ever indicated any kind of catastrophic accident of this nature. And so she always believed that he'd walk again. And I've always believed that too. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I think he would consider, you know, whatever technology becomes available. And as a caveat to this, when I lived in New York, I became friends with Christopher Reeve, not close friends, but he came to the restaurant where I worked. And so when he was injured, I communicated with he and
yeah.
his wife.
And you know, it was being on that respirator that eventually did him in, because
it was the decubitus ulcer that got him. He went septic, and I don't understand how that happened, considering how he availed himself of every piece of technology that there was, and he had a bed sore that went septic on him.
Yeah.
I don't know how
he would have been a perfect candidate for stem cells, I think.
He would, and he was really pushing for it, and we can thank him and his wife for all the hard work that they did, you know, the years they were together promoting.
All right, let's say your name together so I get it down now. Ready?
It's Shari.
Shari.
Sorry.
Shari. How do you spell it?
Charie.
Huh, that's not what I see up on the board.
It's like Charlie without the L. So that's my story.
All right.
And it's a bizarre one.
All right. Thanks. I love Seattle, by the way. Let's go next to West of the Rockies. Tenny, it's Tony in Green Valley, Arizona here. I think I'm not going to read this board anymore.
It's You're fine. Having trouble with the names tonight, George.
Well, it's because I have a typist who I don't know if they know what they're typing today.
Hey, look at
this. Green Valley, right? It's spelled up on my thing.
Yeah.
Valley. Says he just changed it.
Oh.
there he goes.
Okay.
Now it's Valley. Isn't that interesting how that works?
Next time you talk to Robert Felix, ask him if he's seen the Midnight Sun episode of The Twilight Zone.
Okay.
It has him written all over it.
I love him. He's one of the best.
I know I called the wrong number, but I have a great story.
What do you mean you called the wrong? You didn't want this radio show?
Well, I meant to call the great storyline.
Oh, no. Here's the deal on the great storyline. You can call the other lines, but the people on the great storyline have to be telling a great story. So you're okay.
All right, good, because I was worried about the greatness a little. This is a story of my dad and his family when he was growing up, and they were very poor and moved a lot. They would jump in the car. They'd never know when. They'd say, pack up, get in the car. We're moving again. You know, we can't afford to pay rent here anymore. But my dad's dad, my grandpa, was a self-taught mechanic, and he could get a job anywhere he landed. And he also did other odd jobs. So you'll have to forgive me for not knowing what town this starts in and where it ends. It's been told to me.
Passed on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, they're on one of their, they're driving again. They're in the car. They're looking for another place to live. Just living by the sweat of their hands. And they stop in a little place. I don't know if it's there anymore. It's in California, a little place called Hell. And they all get out and they have lunch there.
There's a Hell, Michigan, you know. I know that.
Well, it wasn't Michigan. I know that. You know, you have to forgive me if I flub that part. But I believe it was in California. It may not even be there anymore. It was a little outpost.
Okay, but go ahead.
But anyway, they have lunch in this town called Hell, and then after lunch, they all get back in the car, and they go a little ways farther down the road, and don't know what town they're headed towards, but all of a sudden, my dad's sister, my aunt, calls out, "My wallet's gone," and she had some money from babysitting, and this was the only money.
Oh, no, it's gone, right?
Yeah, this is the only money the entire family had.
Oh, no.
This is my
dad. Nightmare.
My dad, his brother, his two sisters, and his parents, all depending on their daughter's babysitting money. And so they quick go back to the restaurant in Hell and look for the wallet, and it's nowhere to be found. And so they don't know what they're going to do. They're just going to drive till they run out of gas or whatever. And they're going on to the next town, and they don't have any money left, so they say, well...
At least they got out of Hell.
Yeah. I guess this is where we're living, because, you know, we can't go any further. So my grandpa, he goes down the street and immediately gets a job at the little body shop there.
Desperate for money.
Yeah. They hire him on the spot. They end up living there for longer than they live most places. And my dad grows up there and eventually meets my mom, and here I am.
See? Synchronicity.
Yeah. Thanks, George.
Stranger things have happened, to be sure. Crystal in Worcester, Massachusetts, on the wild card line. Hi, Crystal.
Hi there. I was wondering if you knew anything about interdimensional travel.
I do it all the time. No, but what's your question?
Well, I've been having reoccurring lucid dreams. in which I'm approached by dream characters.
Okay.
And they tell me that I'm caught in a parallel dimension in which I can't get out of, and I can't wake up from these lucid dreams.
Now, do you know that you're dreaming in the dream?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a lucid dream.
Lucidity.
All right.
Complete lucidity. However, I cannot wake up from these dreams. I try to wake up, and I cannot. And the dream characters tell me I'm in another dimension.
Now, what is this dimension like?
It is very much, it's my own life, but the dream characters are much older. And I also experience shadow people. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a one particular shadow person in my doorway when I wake up in the morning. And upon researching this, I realized that some people believe that these shadow people have something to do with interdimensional travel.
Well, I do. I believe that they're from another dimension. They somehow squeeze over here, overlapped, but that's where I think they're from. Interesting, though,
yes,
that this would happen to you in a dream state.
Yes. It's happened at least 6 or 7 times, and these dream characters tell me that I cannot leave this dimension.
Are they taking you there?
Yes.
What do they want?
I don't know. It's completely frightening. I just recently moved into this new apartment.
You're going through night terrors.
I've had nightmares every night, but these lucid dreams are so intense that I cannot wake up from them, and I'm told in the dream that it's not a dream, that it's actually another dimension.
Well, what I'm going to recommend for you, Crystal, because I think you're going to need this, is go on to my website. Well, I'll tell you what, this is the website you want to go to, visionaryliving.com. Email Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She's a dear friend of the program. And start telling her what's happening to you, because you need some good professional advice, or this is going to tear you up. We're at the top of the hour. I'll be back in just a moment. Another hour to go of Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. Don't touch your dial.